Okay, let's do this. Hello, Bootstrappers, and welcome to Bootstrapped Web, the show for business owners like you and me who believe that to get to where we're going, we have to learn by doing. I'm Brian Castle. I'm also CastJam on Twitter. And in today's episode, I'll be talking to Dan Norris. He's the founder of Informly. That's inform.ly. Dan just announced a pretty interesting change. He is shutting down part of his product, effectively letting go roughly half of his paying subscribers. So we'll hear why this actually makes a lot of sense, and we'll get the whole story behind his decision and where he plans to take Informly from here. So stay tuned for that in a little bit. What else? If you haven't checked it out already, you can see the first case study on bootstrappedweb.com. In that video, I walk through sweetprocess.com, the homepage design for that, and I give you my thought process behind every step of putting that together. So that's everything from, you know, how I crafted the copy to designing the page in Photoshop to coding it up. So you can check out that case study video at bootstrappedweb.com, and please, you know, let me know what you think. So let's see what's on my radar this week. Last week, I wrote a blog post called What Do the Best Podcasts Get Right? And that's kind of a question that I've been really giving a lot of thought to the past few weeks as I've been preparing to launch this new podcast, Bootstrapped Web. I'm a huge fan of podcasts in general. I'm basically a junkie when it comes to business podcasts and even other stuff. I subscribe to maybe 15 or 20 different podcasts that I actually listen to on a regular basis, like every single episode. I am a total junkie. I wrote a post kind of outlining some of the points that I think the really good podcasts get right. You know, what are my favorite aspects of that? And it's actually been generating some pretty good conversation in the comments and on Twitter and things. So yesterday, my friend Jervis left this comment. He was basically asking the question, you know, do you think that there will be a time when podcasts hit the mainstream? And so I think that's a great question. So I responded to his comment on the blog, but let me kind of expand on that a bit here. Do I think podcasts will someday hit the mainstream? The short answer, yes, I do. You know, or at least they will become much more widely adopted than they are now. And I think that'll happen very soon. You know, I mean, as old as the medium of podcasting is, I do believe that podcasts are still just getting started. You know, I believe podcasts will rapidly grow in the years to come. And you know, mobile is playing a huge role in driving that growth. You know, I mean, if you think about it, so, you know, more and more, almost everyone, I mean, my mom even has an iPhone at this point. If our parents are carrying around smartphones, we know that mobile has taken hold. And, you know, having smartphones and devices that can easily play things like podcasts are really just going to contribute to the growth. I mean, I personally listen to all of my podcasts on my iPhone, including video shows like Mixergy and other ones. So there's so much room to grow for this medium of podcasting. What else? I also want to mention episode number 135 of Startups for the Rest of Us, which is one of my favorite podcasts. I listen to it basically week in, week out. Rob and Mike do a really great job there, so I highly recommend it, especially if you're bootstrapping a software startup. These guys really know what they're talking about. So when I posted that blog post about what do the best podcasts get right, I shot an email over to Rob Walling, and I wanted to ask for his thoughts on that question. I'm just really interested to know what he thought about it. And actually, they decided to include it in their kind of mailbag episode number 135, because it did make for a great topic for them to talk about. And you know, they really did share some great insights on this question about what makes for a great podcast. And, you know, these are just great insights from two guys who clearly know a thing or two about running a successful podcast. So I really appreciate them doing that. And they made some great points. You know, Rob's response really gave me something to think about. And that was that he believes being a solo host of a podcast can get boring very quickly. So obviously I'm kind of breaking that rule here on Bootstrapped Web. But, you know, I hope to make it work by kind of mixing it up with some interviews and case studies and different things. But, you know, things are very early, and I really do appreciate any kind of feedback that you guys want to throw my way, so I can, you know, make this and craft this show as good as it can be. So, you know, I think this this example of what happened here when I reached out to Rob and a few other high profile podcasters to tell them about this post, I think this is a good little lesson, if you will, for bootstrappers if you're looking to gain traction with your blog. You know, after I published that post, and I published it about I think like 10 days ago or so, you know, what basically what I did was I shot a personal email to nearly every podcaster that I listened to, and I listed all my favorite podcasts on that post, and basically I reached out to every single host that's listed there, personal email. You know, I told them I'm a huge fan of their show, and I mentioned my post, and I just asked them, I asked them what their thoughts were on this topic. I didn't ask them to promote the blog post, and I didn't ask them to tweet it. I simply asked for their thoughts on this topic. And let me be very clear, I didn't send these emails as a tactic to gain traffic. I really wanted to hear the opinions of these people who I highly respect. You know, I wrote a blog post about podcasts, and these people run successful podcasts. So clearly it's a question that they must have given some thought to. So I was really genuinely curious to know what they think. And so, you know, doing this kind of outreach for this blog post, it actually did have, you know, the side effect or the side benefit of spreading this content, this post, to a wider audience. You know, I mean, I haven't looked at my analytics or anything. I rarely, if ever, do for my personal blog. But, you know, judging by the comments and the tweets that have been coming in, clearly it went farther than most of my other blog posts do. So I think the lesson here is this. When you feel inspired, get your ideas out there onto the web. You know, put up a blog, put it out on Twitter, on YouTube. And if, and only if, your topic is highly relevant to someone else, reach out to them and ask for their opinion, you know? And I'm not talking about coming up with like a massive system for influencer outreach or doing keyword research, building spreadsheets or anything like that. Just hit on the topics that you feel passionate about, ping a few people who are probably into the same thing, and spark those conversations, pure and simple. You know, I think this is the approach that leads to unforeseen opportunities down the road. So, you know, in the short term, it could mean a couple extra Twitter followers. In the long term, you're building a new relationship with someone, or you're opening up to a new way of thinking about something. You know, somebody else gives you their opinion. You know, who knows? Who knows where these things can lead? So all I really know is that when I'm putting myself out there and reaching out to people who I want to build relationships with, it leads to good things. And with that, let's head into the main event. My conversation with Dan Norris of Informly. So I'm here with Dan Norris, the founder of Informly. That's inform.ly. So Dan, thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me, Brian. I'm looking forward to it.
Great. So for people who aren't familiar, can you give us a quick, what is Informly?
Yeah, cool. So hopefully they haven't been listening to too many other podcasts, because I've given a different answer each time. I've been on a few podcasts this month. So Informly is my business. I've been going through a few changes to work out exactly what it is, but what I've arrived at is basically software for freelancers and web design agencies to email analytics reports through to their clients. So it basically, as a web designer, you can log in, connect all of your clients in analytics, and it creates nice, simple reports for them and enables you to kind of put your own comments in and automatically sends them out to your client each month, so you can basically support retainer clients or even actually charge for a reporting service and build recurring revenue.
Very cool. And so, you know, one of the reasons I really wanted to get you on today was kind of your big news that you announced on your blog. I guess you kind of announced it yesterday or the day before. And that is that your product kind of has gone through some changes, or you're kind of trimming down your product. Can you tell us what is the big change that's happening kind of right now?
Yeah, so I guess I've been doing this for 10 months, and I used to have a web design company, and so the original idea was to build this system for web designers, but it kind of grew, and it sort of grew sideways a little bit throughout the last few months. And I started when I first launched as like an analytics dashboard for the end user, so for small business owners, and then I built the agency version of the product, and then.
Did I lose you?
Sorry, I'm here.
Oh, okay. So you were saying it started out for small business owners, and then from there?
Yeah, so I started out for small business owners, but the original idea was to build the agency version. It took me a few extra months to do that. And then, so the small business version was basically just an analytics dashboard that they could log into and get their stats from a bunch of different places. And the agency version is obviously for web design companies, so their clients don't log in. They just get the reports in their email every month. And then on top of that, in the last few months, I built a separate product which was for content marketers and was more of a direct analytics product that actually tracked people on your website and told you who was converting and that kind of thing. So in the end, I had three products, and I guess what brought me to here is that having three products is a bit too hard for one person. So it's all come back to just one.
Gotcha. So if I understand this correctly, and I actually came to Informally, I was using Informally for quite a while. And I come from it as kind of the second, I fall into the second product group. And that is like the small business owner. Like I was using the reports just for myself. I'm not sending them out to clients the way an agency would. Actually, I was also kind of, you know, just getting into the content marketing product as well.
Sorry about that.
I mean, you know, we'll kind of dig into that here in a little bit. So if I understand this correctly, then when you originally started Informally, the agency product was your original product, or it was the small business product?
The small business product was the original product release, but the agency version was the original idea. So I actually built the agency version for my own company a year or two ago. Like I was actually using it. I mean, it didn't look anything like it looks at the moment. It was hideous. But so that was basically the original idea. But I'm not exactly sure why. I think I just thought that like it would be a bigger idea if I actually just made it available to the end user and integrated with a lot more sources, and that sort of became the main idea. And then I released the agency version once that one had been launched, which took me sort of 3 or 4 months.
That's interesting. You know, when I first found Informally, I kind of saw it as the other way around, or I thought the story was kind of the opposite, where I thought the whole point of Informally was to simplify analytics. And it, I mean, it still is, of course, to really give clients, like the end clients, a simplified report. But I was looking for that as a solo bootstrapped business owner. You know, I mean, I can dig into analytics, I've kind of forced myself to become an expert level at Google Analytics person. But what I was attracted to Informally was just the simplicity, the daily emails. You know, simple reports, simple charts, and I really liked that.
And I mean, I did have people paying for the product, so I actually had more people paying for that version than I had paying for the agency version. But I'd also had about 10 times as many people sign up for it and not pay, and obviously the people that were paying a lot less because it was only a $10 product, right. Whereas the agency version I have people paying me like up to $75 because they've got all their clients in there and it's sending out reports to all their clients. So that was part of it as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I could certainly see why, you know, the change going towards the higher paid agency customers. I mean, the price point makes more sense from a sustainable bootstrap, you know, pricing model.
Yeah, I mean, it's not just the pricing. Like, I was getting consistent feedback from people that, like, this information is interesting, but it's not really that actionable for them, particularly with the content marketing stuff. Like, it was giving them interesting statistics to do with their content, but, like, I don't think most people don't want another system to log into, you know, to get data. Like, most people just have problems that they want solved. And the agency version solves a problem for agencies in that it helps them make their clients happy and helps them prove that they're actually delivering something to them each month. And in some cases, I've got people charging up to $30 a month per client for it and only charge $1 a month per client. So in some cases, it's actually making them quite a lot of money. So I think that was the main thing. Like, the agency version is solving almost a totally different problem than the normal small business version.
Gotcha. I do want to dig into that in a second here, but before we get there, so let's just put this into perspective a little bit. You're very open on your blog every single month. I love these posts, by the way, how you do these monthly reports. You know, you talk about the number of customers you have, monthly revenue, and then you even dig into like all the traffic and conversions and sources of those conversions, everything. You know, it's all there. You know, just awesome work there. And so, can you share, you know, what kind of customer numbers you had on each of the products and how this change is going to affect that?
Yes. Well, thank you for saying that. And yeah, the posts are pretty popular. I think because like when you tell people exactly what you're doing and what results you're getting, then they can sort of apply that to themselves because they can see what mistakes people have made or what things they've done that are working. And it becomes kind of actionable for them, even though the posts are all about me. It's sort of actionable content because it tells people exactly what results I'm getting and enables them to make those decisions for themselves if it's relevant. But in terms of the numbers, well, I mean, paid customers, I had 42 paid customers, and it's not a lot, but I didn't do a very good job of asking people to pay early on. So it's really only been the last few months where I've had consistent month-on-month new people coming in and paying, and I've been growing pretty quick. Like, it was only 10 customers a few months ago. So out of the 42 paid customers, by the way, that's out of over 4,000 people who've at one stage created an account mm-hmm. on the Informally site, you know, over the last sort of 8 to 10 months. So that's part of the problem, which we can probably go into a bit more. But yeah, 42 paid customers, 16 of them were agency customers. I think 3 of them were content analytics customers, which that product is only a few weeks since the trials finished on that product, so I didn't expect to have too many there. Mm-hmm. And then I think about 20 or however many is left, I'm not that good at maths, 20, 22 or something, were the small business customers.
Gotcha. So, I mean, with this change, you're essentially really kind of letting go quite a few. I mean, is that over half of your customers? But you're keeping the customers who are paying the most month to month.
Well, that was part of it. Like, I kept getting consistent feedback from the other two products that it's interesting information, but it's not really actionable. And people would get to the end of their trials and they wouldn't convert to paid. And they were the products that were getting all of my attention. The agency product is just kind of sat there, you know, more or less the same as it was, you know, 4 or 5 months ago. And I continue to get people to sign up for it and convert at the end of their trial, even though I haven't really put the effort into that product that I did put into the others. So
right.
That was a big part of the decision. And out of the, so yeah, I mean, it's, I guess it's close to 2/3 of my customers that I'm letting go.
Sure.
But it's only 30% of the revenue. So the agency version is clearly the one that's bringing in more money. And even though the numbers are small, I think it's enough for me to know that is the version that's the one worth pursuing.
Yeah. And that is an interesting point, how, you know, without really any effort in the last couple of months, with your attention being diverted to those other two newer products, the agency product was still working. I mean, it was still attracting new customers. So, I mean, I think that's a sign right there that product really kind of sells itself. Just imagine if you were able to focus that on that 100% of the time.
Well, you could look at it the other way and say that it's better if I don't focus on it.
Well,
because it seems to be working.
Yeah, well, exactly. Good strategy, you know, just ignore your product, right?
Yeah.
So can you kind of walk through this, like, the story of how you came to this decision? You know, I mean, you did kind of, you know, discuss a little bit about the reasons behind it. But so you were Informally is about 10 months old now, is that right? And
yep.
So how quickly did the idea for this decision come about? Like, was it 3 days ago? Were you thinking about it for like over a month ago, or what?
No, it happened very quickly, and part of the reason is that with software as a service, it takes a long time to actually get any data. Like with the content analytics product, I'll give you the timeline. So I thought of the idea, and really I thought of the idea because it was a problem that I had, that I couldn't get good enough data from my content. And I asked a bunch of people if they had the same problem, and they told me they did. And I asked them if they would pay for a solution, and a lot of them told me that they would. And so it seemed like a good idea. So we kind of dropped everything and started doing a lot with the product. We basically built it in 6 weeks. And on top of that, I was also doing a lot of content that was getting people to sign up to be notified about when it was launched. And I had three or 400 signups just within that 6 week period to be notified when we launched, as well as 30 or so beta users. And then, yeah, so after that 6 weeks, there was sort of a couple of weeks of getting people to use it and bug fixes and all the rest of it. And then on top of that, you got a 3 week trial. So it's really like 3 months before I actually start getting any really good data on whether or not people are going to pay for it. So, I mean, obviously I could have done it a different way, but that's kind of how it worked out. And then once the data started coming through, it seemed to be pretty consistent that, yeah, I mean, people were paying for it, which was cool. But I just felt like to turn it into what it needed to be, it really was going to need all of my focus. And maybe more than the resources I have. It's just me and one developer. And I think to turn it into something, you know, was going to require a lot more than that.
Right.
But yeah, I guess that's a time frame. In terms of actually making the decision, I make decisions pretty quickly. So once it was made, it was a couple of days and it was done.
Yeah, I mean, I remember getting, you know, emails from you just the week prior about the content, you know, product, and you you were putting out content, you were talking about doing like WordPress plugins for it and things like that. So, it seems like, you know, it was a quick turnaround. And I mean, I think that's a good thing. You know, once you hit on the right decision, just go with it and kind of, don't spend too much time deliberating, going back and forth.
Yeah. I mean, that's really where I think I would have had to take it. I would have either had to, well, I could have taken it a few different ways, but going the route of the WordPress plugins, like I think there's definitely an opportunity there to make a plugin that will basically do like retargeting for your own site. And so like because we're capturing information about who is on a person's website, then why don't we display ads and display, you know, opt-in forms and content that actually is useful to that particular person. And bigger companies do this already, but there's not really any good solutions for smaller companies and bloggers to do that. But that's a pretty big idea. It's going to require quite a bit of work to build something like that. So I don't know, if no one else does it, maybe I'll come back to it once I've made the other app profitable.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I do agree there is quite a bit more that can be done in content marketing and analytics specifically for that. And like you were saying, you know, really targeting call to actions and you know, giving away free ebooks and you know, getting on mailing lists and things like that. So
and SEO Moz just brought out their analytics tool. I signed up to be notified about it. I haven't got access to it yet, but I mean, yeah, it looks pretty damn sexy. And
it does. It looks pretty slick.
Yeah, and if I was to just keep it at content marketing analytics, then I'd be going up against that, which is a bit of a scary thought.
Right.
And so, plus, I'm not really convinced that my audience really wants more analytics. You know, I think my audience, the typical sort of small business or web entrepreneur type people, I don't know if they really need more analytics. I think they have bigger problems that they want to solve. And that's why I was sort of looking at the WordPress plugin angle. But yeah, it's interesting. I mean, when I surveyed people to ask them what features they wanted me to build, the most popular one was that they wanted me to work out what content was driving revenue. But at the same time, the app was already telling people what content was driving opt-ins, and people were telling me that it wasn't actionable enough. And I think, well, if if I told them what content was driving revenue, how would that be any more actionable? You know, like I think it's just a case of people sort of saying what they want, but in a lot of cases, what they actually want might be different than what they're saying. So it's very tricky. It's very tricky to work out what people need. And the agency version was telling me what people need because people kept paying me for it.
Right. So how did you, let's talk about that a little bit. Like how much did customer feedback play into this decision? You know, before you kind of made the announcement, were you reaching out to agency customers or reaching out to small business customers and content analytics customers? Like how did that play into it?
Well, I mean, the agency stuff, as I say, I really haven't put a lot of effort into that. And that's the interesting thing, because it's a far simpler product. And I haven't had one person cancel after signing up, whereas the other products, even out of the small numbers, I still had people canceling. And I mean, the agency guys, they kind of put their stuff in. Once they set it all up, it just sends the reports out. And if they have any issues with the reports, they let me know. But with the other products, it was just people sort of constantly asking for new features. So part of it was that the agency one, it's almost done, in that it does what it says it does. And
like all the core features are there.
Yeah, the core features are there. It needs to be improved. But with the other products, they were going to turn into much more complicated products. Like the dashboard product, everyone wanted different services to integrate with, which is a lot of work. And we'd done 15 or so, but I mean, there's competitors out there with hundreds.
Yeah.
So that was going to be a never-ending race to the bottom of who can build the most amount of integrations.
Yeah. Again, it kind of comes back to that 80-20 principle, right? I mean, 20% of your customer, or 80% of your, what is it? I mean, 20% of your customers, 80% of the customer support or requests, yeah, or feedback, you know, just diverts you into all different directions.
Yeah, and you got to pick your battles too. I think I was probably a bit naive going into building a product like that, thinking that I could. I mean, it's going to be very, very hard for me to win that race against a whole bunch of big funded companies who have 20 staff and multiple $1 million of funding that are building out hundreds of integrations. It's going to be very, very, very hard for me to build something that competes with that.
Yeah. I totally know that feeling too. I think a lot of entrepreneurs, especially bootstrappers who come from like a design development background, we have this sense that, like, you know, we could just build it. You know, we could just work on it. And even if we don't know how to do it, we could just go and figure it out. You know, we have that kind of mentality where, you know, at a certain point you need to pull back, or you need someone else around to pull you back and be like, no, think this through. You know, you're getting into something that you probably shouldn't be getting into. So,
yeah, I mean, it's important to have that quality. Otherwise, you probably would never start in the first place. But yeah, I mean, having people around helps. But what I find, and I see this with other people as well, is like there's a really good post a week or two ago on the Intercom blog about pricing and the sort of feedback that you get from people around you versus the feedback that active customers give you. So like if I compare my two products with the dashboard product, I'd get loads of feedback like, oh, you should build an integration with this. You should build more charts from this service. You should go after this particular market, you know, make it just for internet marketers, make it just for affiliate marketers. All this kind of stuff would be the type of feedback I'd get on that product. The agency product, it would be, can you fix this bug? Like, we love the product, we're using the product, but here's an error.
Right.
You know? And so one group of feedback is people giving you their opinion, but it doesn't necessarily mean that once you make those changes, they will pay for your product. And the other group of feedback is people who are happily paying for your product who just want to make it a little bit better. So there's a fine line there where you have to really be careful what you listen to. And I see this with other startups as well. Like people kind of ask me what their idea is like and what they should do. And I'm like, oh, you should do this and this and this. And then I have to pull back and think, well, if you did all of that, would I still pay for it? No, I probably wouldn't. I probably wouldn't pay for it. So really, I shouldn't be giving you advice. You shouldn't be listening to me. You need to find people who would pay for it and are using it and paying for it, and ask them what they think.
That's a great point. And so that kind of leads me into my next question. So other than actually asking your customers for this feedback to kind of help you guide your direction. Were you, you know, as you were considering, so you thought about the idea of cutting these products and going in the direction of just the agency. Did you kind of run that by any other like advisors or if you're like part of a mastermind group or anything like that?
Not sort of directly, but I did. It all kind of started when I am part of a few mastermind groups, and we chatted about my product on one of the calls the week before all this happened, and people kind of said, "Yeah, the agency version sounds like something I'd use. It sounds like a no-brainer." I mean, I've got 20 clients. There's, of course, I would pay $20 to send them reports. And the other thing was it was becoming hard for me to explain what Informly was, and I think even people who know me and people on the call were kind of asking me, what is this and how will it help me? And it was a hard question for me to answer because it was three totally different products. And when I made the decision to build extra products, I didn't want to create new names and create new domains and all of that, which seems to be the way people do it, because I don't really have the resources for doing that. But in the end, I think it's important that people understand what your product is. So,
sure.
To get back to your question, I mean, I did talk to a few people about it, but the main thing that drove the decision was not what people were saying, because I think what people were saying was part of the reason I got into the problem in the first place, is I kind of listened to that rather than listening to what people were saying with their wallets.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. So once the decision is made, you know, you're going to go forward with it. What is the next step? You know, how do you actually go about implementing this change? Was it like, did you have to, before you even informed the customers, did you have to put any like groundwork in place? Like, what's step number one?
Well, the unfortunate thing was I just set up Infusionsoft, and I'd spent a good part of the last couple of weeks setting up all of the sequences and all of the campaigns. I'd set up campaigns totaling 83 different individual emails. And three different product sequences. So I put so much work into it. So I kind of had to undo a lot of that. So I had to take down the sales pages, make sure people didn't sign up again, make sure the campaigns weren't running anymore. And I obviously had to notify existing paid customers who got notified straight away.
And so what was the reaction when you did that? So you basically just sent an email to all the customers. What kind of reaction did you hear?
You know, I think a lot of people, there was different reactions. I mean, some people said that they were sad because they used it and they liked it. You know, quite a few people said that, which sucks. But you know, I think a lot of people were using that product. They kind of signed up because they wanted to support me. And, I just felt like there were quite a few people who weren't actively using it, and they were paying for it. They weren't actively using it, which kind of bothered me. And I think those people, you know, I mean, I don't think they're actively using it, so I don't think they're that worried that we shut it down. But then of course, there are people who were actively using it who were disappointed. Other people around me, you know, those who wanted to support me just kind of said, yeah, that sucks, but I think it's probably the best decision because it sounds like that's where the money is. That's pretty much it. I mean, I had to take down all the campaign sequences, and I started planning out a new homepage, which was going to be just for the one product. And there's still a fair bit of work to go on all of that, the process for signing up and all of that. So it's really not all done yet.
Gotcha. Yeah, and I do want to kind of get into how your marketing approach is going to change now that you've made this change. But before we get there, The change is made, but were there any kind of technical challenges, or maybe you're still working through them in terms of, you know, reconfiguring your product or your sign-up system or your payment system? Like any technical challenges that happen when you're cutting two products?
Yeah, there are. I mean, there's a whole bunch of stuff. I mean, I have to take everyone's invoices out of the system. I have to cancel the subscriptions. The One Analytics product had about 20 cron jobs running. You know, because it was going off and caching everyone's data every 2 hours and putting a huge load on the server, and so all of that stuff has to be turned off. You know, the customers' accounts actually have to be closed. I mean, I haven't even done that yet. Mm-hmm. So, and on top of that, the content analytics product is, you know, had people putting tracking code on their website. So there's a bunch of websites out there without tracking code on it. So I need to basically make sure that that page that, that loads is still active. It won't do anything, but it won't break the site as such until people take those that tracking code off their site. So yeah, there are a few technical headaches associated with it.
Yeah, I can imagine. Okay, so now that you are, you know, you're still kind of working through this, but now that you're sure that you're focusing on agencies, how are the marketing efforts going to change from here, or are they going to change?
Yeah, so there's a few things. I did a podcast recently with Trent from Bright Ideas on Infusionsoft, and thank goodness I signed up for Infusionsoft 3 weeks ago, which I wondered if it was a good decision at the time. But looking at it now, it looks like they've doubled their prices as of today.
Oh, really?
So yeah. That's luckily,
you know, I listened to that podcast and it basically sold me on the idea of Infusionsoft. And
yeah,
now I haven't signed up yet, so now I'm screwed.
Yeah, Trent's a good salesman. I mean, I'm sure they do deals or whatnot. Maybe they're just testing the pricing. But yeah, I luckily got in when you can get a very generous account for not too much money. So I've got all that to work out. But one of the cool things that it does is, like, if I have an opt-in on my website, I can get people to sign up for a bit of content. And then after they sign up, I can ask them, you know, are you a web design agency or are you a small business owner? And so I've got to implement that. And so when people sign up, I'll be able to put them into different sequences. And so if they are a web designer or a freelancer, then I put them into a sequence that talks about informally the product. If they're not, then I funnel them into some other sequence. Maybe I'm going to do an affiliate program. So maybe I funnel them into the affiliate program, or maybe I just build an audience that shares my content, which is very effective. I've also got a lot of content for agencies already. I've got an email course and 10 podcast episodes and a bunch of blog posts. So I've got a lot of content there for agencies. So at this stage, I think I'll probably keep the opt-ins on the site, a general sort of stuff around content marketing and online marketing, because that's the content I enjoy producing. But I'll do a better job at filtering out agencies, and I'll also start producing some more content specifically for agencies, which is something I'll start doing this week. Well, next week, given that it's Friday.
Gotcha. And so even within this single agency product, you still do know, or you can still segment between freelancers and larger agencies. And so even within one product, there are kind of two avenues, or at least two avenues that you can go in terms of targeting customers.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if I'll get that granular with it. I think I'll probably just, if they're selling, you know, web online related services to clients, then I'll let them know about the product and encourage them to sign up. And it's really just a pricing tier after that. It's based on the number of clients you have. The product is exactly the same.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, maybe the marketing has to change for different groups. I'm not really sure. I mean, most of my marketing, well, all of it is just content on the site. So I think I'll more or less keep doing what I'm doing, but I'll create more stuff. Actually, I've got something coming out next week, which will be a template for freelancers and agencies to use to review clients' websites that they can do before they land a project. So that's the kind of stuff I'll start putting out.
Oh, very cool. Yeah, you know, I mean, that's kind of the last topic that I want to hit on here is your content marketing efforts and how they relate to this change. So if anyone has not been following Dan's efforts with content marketing on the Informally blog, definitely go ahead and check it out, because I mean, you're just like insane when it comes to putting out content between the podcast and these articles and the free tools and things. I mean, just really, really awesome stuff. You know, absolutely no fluff. I can't, you know, give you enough respect about that.
Thanks. Yeah. So one of the things I'm a bit critical of on my blog is people who are just putting out lots and lots of broad content that doesn't really relate at all to, you know, the kind of customers they're looking for.
Yeah.
So I don't really want to turn into that guy. Now that my content is, you know, appealing to some freelancers and agencies, but it's really sort of more broad and general. So I do want to get a little bit more targeted with it. But I'm also happy that I've produced a whole bunch of content that's going to help sort of people like you and me, because that's really what I'm passionate about. So
yeah, absolutely. And so, I mean, you kind of mentioned that you have a few things coming up in terms of content targeted at agencies, or you know, would be of interest to agencies, like the template for them to evaluate a client site or whatever. So is that kind of the plan from here? You know, as you look at your editorial calendar, is it really thinking more about aligning the topics towards that avatar, or just kind of keeping it broad and see what types of things, you know, pick up?
I think I'll do a bit of a combination of both. Like, I don't really want to swap to just creating content for freelancers and agencies, because I think I'll probably get bored doing that pretty quickly. And it's not really what I'm passionate about writing about. So I think I will create a bunch of resources and a bunch more sort of opt-ins and downloads for freelancers and agencies, but I'll keep the general content. I mean, if you look at the Kiss Metrics blog, you know, their content is not about analytics. You know, a small percentage of it is, but really their content is just broadly related to their audience. And so I think I'll sort of continue to follow that sort of model, just create stuff that is interesting to my audience, and work out a way to leverage that audience to get more agencies. And that's part of the reason of doing the affiliate program, which I to date haven't been interested in doing. But now that a huge chunk of my audience is not a potential customer, it makes a lot of sense that I can sort of have something for those people as well.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that kind of leads into my last question here, is about content marketing. And really, we could, and we probably should, spend a whole show just talking about content marketing. But you know, now that you're focusing on agencies, which are larger companies, typically larger companies, are you finding or do you expect that the content marketing approach is less effective for those larger customers? Or so the content marketing approach attracts more of the smaller guys like you and me, or like other freelancers who, you know, they're tapped into social media, they're tapped into the web, whereas the stakeholders at these larger companies, they're not necessarily reading all these blogs. They're just like they kind of react more to a high touch sales approach. Do you find that at all?
Yeah, I mean, maybe agencies is the wrong word, because I mean it's sort of hard to pick a word, but at least out of my current audience, they're all small businesses. Mm-hmm. You know, they're all, even our largest plan at the moment is for 150 clients, and that's how many clients I had in my company, and it was just me and one or two guys, so I'd still consider that a very small business. And my entry level plan's $30 a month, so it's well and truly affordable for a freelancer.
Right.
So that's still the audience I'm going after. I mean, if I was going after bigger companies, then I would have to have a different approach. And I've actually found even just emailing people, like cold emailing people, which I've tested out a bit as well, works with agencies better than almost anything else. So it's kind of a tough market to get into, especially the bigger the company gets.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, you know, and like you said, for this content marketing approach, there probably is a large chunk of the audience who's interested in the product and interested in your content, but maybe they're not at the level yet of having the number of clients. And so that's where like an affiliate program comes in, or just general awareness where they can, you know, share your content and it gets in front of the right people.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, I would prefer to have a big audience who are all potential users of my product. I mean, that's a nice position to be in, but yeah, it's not really the reality, because I've already got a decent sized audience at the moment. I don't really want to kind of kill my audience as well as all of my customers.
So, sure.
And I like to be able to write content that people actually see. So yeah, I'll work out a way to kind of, you know, I think I give enough value to the people in my audience that they'll share my content, and people who know web designers and freelancers, I'm sure will jump onto the affiliate program, and hopefully that'll work out.
Great. Well, you know, Dan, thanks a lot for taking the time. And, you know, I think what you're doing here is great. I do think it's a very smart decision, what you're doing in terms of pivoting your product here. And like I said, everything with your content marketing approach has been just fantastic. So definitely keep up the great work. I like reading it. So, you know, thanks a lot for taking the time. And let's do it again sometime and maybe dig into the content marketing stuff. I'd also like to get into the email marketing, Infusionsoft stuff as well. So,
yeah, I'm definitely keen for that. I'm always happy to talk about content marketing. I'm going to put a post out, which is like a content marketer's checklist which sort of gets people to quiz themselves on a bunch of sort of attributes of being a content marketer, and I've written a whole bunch of content around that as well. So that's something that'll be coming out soon that maybe we could chat about and might make a good episode as well.
Very cool. Definitely. So where can people reach out to you?
Yeah, so just inform.ly is my site, and you can click on the blog there. I think I've only got one item in my menu now. It's blog. So you should be able to find it. Yeah. So that's pretty much it. You can check out freelancers and agencies, check it out. And I'm just keen for anyone to give me feedback on, you know, how they'll use the product and just anything really. So you can get me at dan@inform.ly, and yeah, I hope you like it.
Excellent. Well, thanks a lot, Dan, and let's talk again soon.
Cool. Thanks, Brian. Thanks for having me.
Okay, so I really enjoyed that episode with Dan, and here are a few key takeaways that really stuck with me from that conversation. The first one was he really recognized the complexity of what he was trying to do, and then he stepped back from it. So, you know, he went down this path of trying to tackle the content analytics product and that pain point. And while this is an interesting pain point to tackle, and I think there is a need out there for this kind of thing, you know, Dan was able to step back and realize that it's leading him down this rabbit hole with tons of complexity. And, you know, for entrepreneurs like us, knowing when not to go after something is very difficult, but it's very important. And I think Dan was very smart to recognize that. The other thing was, you know, knowing which feedback to focus on and act on and which feedback to take with a grain of salt. So, you know, Dan talked about how he received tons of feedback and ideas from fellow advisors and his mastermind groups and whatnot. But when it comes down to it, a lot of those ideas don't matter. You know, the only feedback that really matters is what you hear from your paying customers. And in Dan's case, that was his agency clients. So, you know, knowing which feedback to focus on is the key takeaway here. Okay, so now it's time for the big question. And here's my question for you this week. Tell me about one big change or big decision that you made to change the course of your business during the past year. And share that story with me in the comments on this episode, and I'll share them in next week's show. And of course, be sure to include your website URL so we can all see what you do. Be sure to tune in next Monday for another episode of Bootstrapped Web, and let's catch up on Twitter between now and then. Take care. Hey guys, I've got a mailing list, so please head over to bootstrappedweb.com, enter your email, and you'll be in the loop on everything that's going on here. Thanks for tuning in to Bootstrapped Web.